Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Fozcast. Today, we're going to be talking to Brentford defender Ben Mee. And we spoke about our encounter last week in the USA and an epic monsoon that nearly killed us. It's probably not that bad, but it was pretty cool, to be perfectly honest with you. We spoke about the money ball tactics that Brentford use when it comes to their set pieces and a bonus that is attached to it as well. The differences between Sean Dyche and Thomas Frank, and also a fantastic story about a player who took a mid-season break to Benidorm and got absolutely nailed by the manager. Welcome to the Fozcast. Ben, welcome to Fozcast, mate. I want to start, okay? So I met you out in America last week. You were on pre-season tour with Brentford. I was out there with Wrexham. We'll share a few little stories of where we met and all that kind of stuff. But how did you find the whole trip in general?
The trip was fantastic. Yeah, really enjoyed it from start to finish with a really good bit of training, but also like able to see, you know, a lot of where we were staying as well. And the gaffer was really good, giving us a bit of time to go and have a look around as well as, you know, working out.
Where did you go? Did you stay in the same place, or was you constantly moving around?
Yeah, we were in Washington, D.C. for about 5 days. Yeah. And then we went to Philly and had our first game. Then we went straight to Atlanta, second game.
What was that like? Did you play in the big Atlanta stadium?
Yeah, we played there. Fantastic stadium.
It's about 70,000.
That's like the new
best,
bad boy.
Probably the best light I've seen.
Really, yeah.
Indoors, like, unbelievable.
Compare it to Tottenham.
Yeah, I mean, that was the comparison. It was like, but I don't know, with the closed roof that opens up a bit like a camera and that all around. I mean, I love the Spurs stadium, actually. I think the stand is amazing at the side, but this was like the hospitality there as well, and all around the pitch and stuff is, you know, imagine going as a fan, it'd be incredible.
Different level. Yeah. So what did you find the reception like from the American fans? Because we, like I said, when we were out there, honestly, I was blown away. I was there, but it was kind of similar thing. I think we were both there sort of about 10 years ago. But the progression and how kind of intense the fans are now, it seems different, doesn't it?
Yeah, I went with Man City when I was about 19. Yeah. Probably 12 years ago or so, 13 years ago. And the difference now, the enthusiasm, the appetite for the Premier League is just grown, and, you know, going around the town and people spotting you and things and just knowing who you are.
Yeah.
You know, Americans knowing who I am was a bit crazy, like. And the energy, they love the sport out there anyway, don't they? You know, we some of the facilities there. We trained at high school and it was incredible. You know, kindergarten to 16, they've got indoor pools with diving boards.
The
pitches were immaculate with stadiums and stuff, and you know, the love for sport is incredible, and the Premier League seems to be growing and growing.
So just quickly, this was part of the Premier League summer series. So there was Brentford, Chelsea, Villa,
Fulham,
Newcastle and Fulham
out
there. So obviously all playing like a round robin tournament, which is great for the league. Did you get to see, I guess as a player, you're kind of in and out the stadium, but did you get to see much around the stadium? Because what they do in terms of like the fan park and fan engagement is very impressive.
Yeah, they do it different, don't they? I mean, the fans get there a lot earlier as well. Yeah. And, you know, coming into the stadium, you see them parking up and getting the chairs out and stuff and making the most of it. Yeah, don't they?
So
it's great. Yeah, it's a great atmosphere. And, you know, even inside the stadium, the fans, the enthusiasm was superb. But obviously we didn't see it as much as probably, you know, what the people did outside.
Yeah.
But yeah, you got sort of the feel of the occasion. And everyone loved it, though, I think.
So you had an engagement out there. I had an engagement out there with the British ambassador's residence in Washington. And I didn't really know much about this thing, by the way. It kind of like got sprung on us a bit, didn't we? We were just told to pack like semi-smart clothes or something.
We didn't know we were going until the day.
No.
And then he said, have you got something smart? We go, why are you going to the British ambassador's garden party?
Yeah.
And we were like, I guess we've got a t-shirt.
So anyway, we've turned up at this event and you can tell straight away it's a bit of a schmooze, isn't it? Yeah. Like there's some sort of like powerful looking people, isn't it? Uh-huh. The Fulham owner was there actually, like he's looking $1 million. So we've walked into this place and it's absolutely roasting. It's about 35 degrees and it's all nice. It's like canapes and like posh drinks and stuff like that. And then all the players and all the sort of pundits, all the celebrities start arriving. And very quickly descended into a bit of chaos, really, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, man. It was madness, the monsoon that came in.
Monsoon?
And, oh, it was incredible. Never seen anything like it. The trees were swaying, weren't they? And it was like a bit, getting a bit dangerous.
We were all under a gazebo.
Under a gazebo, weren't we? And yeah, it was mad. All everyone that was dressed up nicely and that. And so we're getting soaked. And yeah, it was chaos. I didn't know I was going until like the day, pretty much. It was the day before we played our last game. And, you know, I needed to get some shopping done for the kids and that. You know, get a little present or something like that. Yeah. So I got told I was going to this with three other players and the gaffer. And yeah, we ended up hunched under this gazebo. And yeah, it was mental. And yeah, the gaffer was all ordering an Uber to get out of there.
Honestly,
and,
right? Thomas Frank, we kept looking over at Thomas Frank. He was shitting
himself.
He
looked really
himself,
worried, didn't he?
He was double shitting himself.
Yeah, he did.
Right?
He looked
because
really
the
worried.
Lightning at this point, right? So imagine it's in the garden, right? And they've got all these lovely gazebos and marquees and stuff. But they're not like heavy-duty marquees because they get lovely weather out there. It's like 35 degrees. So they're not expecting anything serious. And when it started really blowing a gale and then the lightning started coming, it was raining so hard that the grass was fully saturated at this point.
Tables getting flipped over.
Tables getting flipped over, getting zinged everywhere, like roof linings getting ripped off and stuff. And we were standing in like an inch of water. And when the lightning starts coming down, I was looking at these like... we could die in a minute. Genuinely, we could die. And there was one point, right, honestly, where the lightning came and within a split, like, I'm talking less than a second, the thunder was there as well. And like the old, you know, remember like they used to say, count the miles kind of thing. So if you count a second, it's 1 mile, 2 seconds is 2 miles. Yeah. So it was obviously like around us. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking at Thomas Frank and thinking, he was panicking, mate. He was proper nervous.
But you know, because they say rubber, isn't it? Like, is...
Yeah, a grounder.
Yeah, you know Jamie Reynolds from Velocity.
Was he walking around with the umbrella? Like,
Jamie,
was that the guy?
He's a brummy, isn't he? Oh, Murray, I took up the Air Force Ones. Oh,
I don't know, you know, mate. I don't know. I think if it hits, we're all dead here. Yeah. But yeah, it turned into, like I say, an absolute fire. So we were there probably half an hour and then the heavens opened and it was a case of, right, just go. You've just got to go now. Yeah. So we got out there. But we had a nice time either way.
We did. And just out there, obviously, it is so hot. How challenging is it playing in those conditions? Because even sitting there watching was a challenge.
It was hard work. Played 90 minutes in the last game. My feet were on fire. Oh. Like, honestly, my feet were burning up. And the first game in Washington was even hotter. Like, and obviously, the indoor one was a nice breather from it.
Yeah.
I got the two outdoor games. I played 20 minutes in the indoor one, and then played 90 in the outdoor one. So I was a bit, fucking hell. So it was, I'm not made for the sun.
What's it like playing on them pitches? Because I think we're guilty in the UK of kind of getting treated to these unbelievable pitches that are constantly wet, constantly watered. Yeah. Because you know what it's like as a footballer. You want to be playing on them pitches that you know what to expect all the time. You know what you're going to get. But when you're out there, they'll water it before the game.
Yeah.
And then very quickly, I'm talking within like 5-10 minutes, it's dry again, isn't it?
I think you could tell if you were watching it. It was really dry and a bit bobbly out there. Yeah. And it doesn't sort of make for a flowing game.
Yeah,
but,
I
mean, it's hard to do that in that kind of heat and that, you know, that weather to keep it sort of, to keep it wet and slick. But, you know, the pitches weren't too bad. The pitches were fine, pretty soft, you know, good on the knees and the limbs. I quite enjoyed that. But I mean... Yeah, you know, it was good enough for the games that were played on it, for sure.
Can you just try and sort of dispel a little bit of a myth for me as well? Because I think there's so many people this time of year when they start looking at pre-season friendlies, they see the results and they're like, oh, they're struggling, they're having a bad time, they're this and that. Genuinely, can you read too much into pre-season friendlies?
No, not really. I don't think we were really pleased with our first two games. Yeah. We actually got beaten both of them, but the way we played, and because you don't really play your full strength side.
Sort of... Experimenting.
Experimenting with different things. And we certainly experimented with the Brighton game. We tried a way of playing that probably we wouldn't do in the Premier League, but it was just, you know, either the gaffer said it was just good fun to do sort of thing. So it was like he wanted to get running in our legs and that. So we were literally just pressing everywhere. And you know what Brighton are like, popping it around and that
I
stuff.
I saw a few clips, mate. They look lovely, to be fair.
Great, yeah. But the idea was, you know, get the running in that we're going to need to do during the season as well. And he said it was, you know, a good bit of fun and that stuff, and some of the stuff that came off was great. But you know, for myself personally, getting in pre-season, it's just about getting you going, getting you ready.
I think getting the bearings back again, getting on the pitch, finding out those positions, feeling, getting your feel for it. But like I say as well, you can So there's so many games that even when we played out there, we'd play at night, but we'd do a training session in the morning. Yeah, yeah. Like, and I'm talking a proper training session. Mm. It's not just a walkthrough or anything like that. So I just think there's so many, like I've seen Man United might have lost a couple of games and this and that and whatever, and you've got Man United fans already, and then you've got Arsenal fans jumping on it going, oh, you're struggling, you're having a bad... It's not about that, is it?
It's not, no, but obviously you want to win the games, yeah. You know, just a bit of bragging rights. But yeah, it's... It is a lot more. There's a lot more to it than probably what travel. You just see on the games and that and stuff. Yeah, the travel, like you say, the training beforehand. You probably got a bit in your legs already. That you know you might have had a tough day the day before as well. It's just about getting the legs going. And
what's jet lag been like for when you got back?
Yeah, I've been a little bit struggling. Yeah. You have that fogginess in your head, and horrible, you know, the kids are getting up early and waking you up because you've not been there for 2 weeks. So, but no, yeah, you'll get there. I'm sure it'll be all right.
We'll
you got me up this morning to get come here. So,
I was, to be fair, yesterday was the tough day for me. So, like, I was the same as you. We arrived back on the Monday. Today's the Wednesday.
Yeah.
I had one day of absolute hell.
Yeah.
Absolute hell. But last night, managed to long it out. Got a good night's sleep. We're cooking again, baby.
No, good.
We're good to go. Yeah,
we're flying. We're
good. Yeah.
FPL. We can't go any further.
Yeah. Before we get into Ben Mee, the player, we want to talk about fantasy Premier League.
My captain, my hero.
He's not your captain. Don't
FPL
lie.
Legend.
You've never had Ben Mee.
He's not my captain. I'm just part of the narrative. Ben Mee.
Ben Mee, fantasy Premier League legend, by the way. Do you play? Are you a player?
I used to be.
Yeah?
I used to be. I used to give up sort of halfway through, and then I was kind of like, what's the point in doing it if I'm not going to follow it all the way through? There's no point. But yeah, I used to do it a lot. I used to be into it. Like,
you know your stats last season?
I did all right. I think it was my best season.
Yeah,
it was your best season. Fifth highest scoring defender on the game all season. 143 points.
Heavy return.
That's good.
That's very
all right
good.
For my price as well. I think I'm cheap, aren't I?
Yeah.
Ben back in this year? Yeah, I see.
You're what people call a differential.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so you're a differential, Ben. You're good value, but you, more often than not, give a seriously solid return for your value, right? So like I say, 143 points. I know there's a lot of people listening to this. And by the way, we're starting a Cycling GK, well, not starting, we're carrying on a Cycling GK Super League. What's the code, by the way, Jamie?
We'll put it on the screen now.
We'll put it on screen now. If you're listening, the code, I'll give it to you actually, it is... it's obviously the Cycling GK Super League. It is the code to get into it is G9RCSC. We'll put it on screen now. We'll put it in the link in the description, all that kind of stuff.
The season before last, we were the biggest league on the entire game.
On the entire game.
And I think Sky might have got the umpers from it. So they set up a pundits league to become the biggest one.
Well, no, well, what they did is they set up a league where you're automatically enrolled in it.
Basically.
Do you remember like Apple all those years ago where you were automatically given the U2 album?
Yeah.
Like what? Yeah. Honestly,
I do remember that.
Yeah, that's what it is. What Sky have done is you've automatically enrolled in their league now, so they're going to have the most people, which is a bit of a shambles, to be honest with you.
So a bit of an alpha for the FPL. We have like a set piece bonus, so we're big on set pieces and things like that. So hopefully we'll get a few more goals this year.
Okay,
that's
good.
So,
that's good inside knowledge.
What do you mean set-piece bonus? Break that down for us.
We'll be going heavy on set-pieces. So if we score from a set-piece a certain time, at the end of the season, the lads will get like a bonus because like Brentford are big on sort of stats and percentages of scoring goals and things like that. And so set-pieces is a sort of a high chance of getting a shot on goal or a chance or whatever the numbers are. So we sort of work off that, and at the end of the season, it, you sort of add it up from... for and against. So if you,
I love that.
So like that, so it gives you the incentive
going
for it.
that screams of Brentford all over to me.
I was surprised when I went there and that this was the way they did it and that. But yeah, so it's
we were looking at our set pieces for last year, and 25% of our goals came from set pieces.
Yeah,
is this something that other teams should seriously take note of then?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, we take every opportunity to make the most of our set pieces. We work on them a lot.
Yeah.
And we scored a lot of goals from it. I think we scored, 25 goals or something like
that. That's going to be about a third of all your goals then.
In a way that we sort of measure it as our club, but measure it probably differently to the Premier League measure.
Not a direct header or a direct header from a set piece.
Within second phase could be part of the set play. Within a certain amount of time, we sort of measure it. So if it, within 15 seconds or something like that of having a set piece, it counts as a set piece. So that's the way sort of they measure it.
Surely this for you then is like when you're signing for Brentford, surely this for you is like heaven to your ears. And like, because coming from Burnley, genuinely coming from Burnley, where it's always been a team where, so I remember back in the day playing against Burnley, just thinking, oh, for God's sake, this is going to be murder today. And it is murder. You're playing against a Sean Dyche team where you know you're going to have 6 foot three, 6 foot four monsters. And every time a ball comes into the box, it's a pre-worked routine. It's brutal, isn't it?
Well, yeah, even compared to Burnley, though, we were quite conservative at Burnley compared to the way Brentford work it. Because if we're 1-0 up in the 90th minute against Man City away from home, it'll still
going to happen. Come on. We
beat 2-1. We beat 2-1 this season.
So. Oh, yeah, they did.
Do you know what I mean? He'll still want us to go up. We won't like.
Really? Yeah. No, like, shying away. Yeah, no shirking.
So when I first arrived, I think there was a game and I was looking over. Are we going up? And he was like, don't ask me. just go up. Like,
oh, so, you stick to your principles.
Honestly,
and that's
every
it.
Time like that, that's it's like, go for it. Like, go for the,
and how, you know. Like with the stats then, because Brentford are known almost, you hear like that Moneyball type thing a few years ago and them signing players. Is that something you notice as a player? Is that a massive philosophy around the club?
There is a big philosophy, but we only see sort of a small snippet of it, really. I think we get the sort of the end product of what goes into it, because they're always doing numbers, crunching numbers. The owner's really big on that, and his sort of profession and his job and company is all about the numbers. So he sort of brings that into Brentford as well, and there's a lot of work that goes in behind it. We sort of see the end bit in a presentation, sort of in the meeting room, but it's a lot of legwork goes into it.
Do you think, I don't mean this disrespectfully, do you think signing a Ben Mee for Brentford is, do you think they've done the studying on that? Do you think they've looked at the data, the numbers, seen how many games you've played, seen what you produce in your games, and then made a signing based on that?
I think so. I was obviously very different to their usual signings of young players, but I think they wanted someone to come in with a little bit more experience. I think they've seen numbers and my defensive capabilities, probably looked at that, I guess, and maybe my set pieces as well at the same time, you know, getting my head on things and you know, in the opposition box and maybe our box as well. So they probably looked at that and maybe thought they could work with something.
That's definitely something that, like, Brighton and Brentford are the two that really stick out.
Yeah.
That you say, like you're saying about, this is the way we're incentivized on set pieces and maybe not even first phase, but second phase. That's something that those two teams in particular, you can see when players are signed in, they just slot in. And that's not by chance, is it? No. It is because of a recruitment process because you sign players based on their attributes, right?
Like I say, like, I'm pretty sure, like, and again, I don't mean any disrespect by this, but when you're signing a player, I know what it's like behind the scenes. You know what it's like behind the scenes. There's certain players that probably go under the radar a little bit and they don't get the respect or the praise that they fully deserve. But there's certain players that I've played with where I'm like, they have to be playing on a Saturday afternoon. They might not be the biggest name, but I know what I'm going to get from them. I know I can rely on that player. So we saw a quote, didn't we, from Sean Dyche saying that Ben Mee basically is one of the most underappreciated, underrated players that play for my team. He's a bit like a Steve Bruce. Did you remember this quote? He's a bit like a Steve Bruce, basically, where he's never had an international cap. He never gets really spoke about, but he's one of the first players on the team sheet every single week. And I know how important those sort of players are.
Yeah, I think they're important. I mean, sort of what I wanted through my career is to be reliable, consistent, and wanted the manager to trust me, basically, you know, and that's how you get in a team.
Yeah.
That's how you stay in a team, really. And I always encourage young players to, you know, to be able to gain the manager's trust and be that person that they can rely on. And that's how you get in the team. That's how you progress and move on forward.
I've got a theory that I think I need 8 Ben Mees in my team. I do. I need 8 Ben Mees, and I'll give 3, a maximum 3. Those little rogues, you know, those
you want much pace in your team.
So. Yeah, I know. That's fine, though. I know what I'm going to get from them. As long as everybody's on the same page, you've got half a chance, haven't you? You let those 3 rogue ones go and do what they want to do. You know that they might be a 4 one week, they might be a 10 the next week, but you need a solid base, don't you?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think going back to Burnley, I think we sometimes lack that rogue that would just go and do a little bit and, you know, win the game for you, sort of thing, off the cuff, or do something like, you know, that would, like win the game or score an unbelievable goal or something like that.
I think that's something the teams that you've kind of played for, isn't it? That, like Watford, West Brom over the years, they did have those kind of players, didn't they?
Yeah.
But some of the, like, look at like players like Gerard Deulofeu, but you probably get one performance out of, I don't know, 5 or 6.
Oh, that's a bit harsh, you know.
Yeah, but is that
one out of 5 or 6?
No, Jerry. as in every few games.
Yeah, I think.
But
that's,
when he lit it up, he was ridiculous.
He was ridiculous. He was fantastic. And but like I say, you have to account for that. And it's probably annoying for you just as much as it would be for me sometimes. But you have to go, yeah, cool. But please be on it today, would you, mate? That'd be exactly. Lovely if you could do that. Yeah.
And when they are on it, you buzz it on.
You let them do it. Yeah. Talk to me about Thomas Frank then. So you said a few things and bits and bobs already. Yep. I think Thomas Frank, if from the outside looking in, is probably hot property for a lot of teams. There's a lot of teams would look at him, would want him as their manager. What's he like as a guy? What's he like as a coach?
A great guy. You know, really personable, knowledgeable, tactically. You know, very knowledgeable on the training ground. Very involved and great. Good to talk to.
Yeah.
Good to chat to. And you know, he's very involved with the squad and creates a really good culture that he sort of sets. And you know, he's very, very humble as well and down to earth and yeah, had some good talks with him, to be fair.
Is at Brentford, is he, you know, like there's different kind of managers. You have managers that just do the match, they just do the players. Is he a bit more of an all-encompassing kind of manager? Does he take charge of absolutely everything? Does he have a say with every person that comes through the door?
I think he's fully involved in everything. You see him in and out of everything that's involved. And I'm like looking at him thinking, you must be
busy.
Knackered. Like, busy, loves football. We'll talk about football all day long. He's got some great coaches around him as well that do bits, sort of defensively, set piece, on the training ground. But he oversees everything and is involved in.
What's he like on a match day? Is he a shouter?
No, he's not a shouter. No, he's not at all. He's very calm. Sometimes I'm thinking, coming in the dressing room, thinking he's going to go mad here and stuff. And he's not. He's very calm. I've seen him sort of lose it maybe once.
Yeah.
But that wasn't even football related. That was just like people messing about. And he's very calm. You kind of like want him to have a go sometimes.
Really?
You know, like you kind of like go on, have, you know,
dig him out.
Yeah,
dig
some players out. But he's the way he does things is very calm you know, you got to respect him for that, for sure.
We played a pre-season friendly, actually, at Watford a couple of years ago, and he said the Brentford team came in, we were playing on the trainer, and I was just watching from the sidelines, and he was ferreting up and down that side. Honestly, he was just constantly on the go, talking to his players, making sure they do this, making sure they do that, and every one of us were kind of thinking, yeah, that's proper that. And I can't remember who our manager was at the time, but ours, it was like chalk and cheese, honestly. It could have been any manager, to be honest with you. But it was honestly chalk and cheese. Yeah. Everyone was thinking, wow, that is... He's proper.
No,
this
he's
guy.
Proper on it. Like, and even asking for our opinions as players, and taking them on board as well. You know, he wants that knowledge from everybody and that input, and you know, you got to respect that as well.
Hey, so,
you know,
if you're as a manager, if you can put your ego aside and actually listen to the players and ask for their points of view, and
it goes
all
a long
that.
Way for sure. It goes a long way, and a lot all the lads sort of respect him and really enjoy working for him, which I think you see on a match day for sure.
Yeah. When you were saying about asking for opinions, obviously when transfers are made, now's the time of year, people are moving and shaking. People call people, right? Yep. And you get a lot of phone calls, Ben, what's he like as a lad, what they like. Do the managers of your own team ask you? Is that a common thing? So if you played with a player at Burnley or at City as a kid, is that something that is quite common?
I mean, we signed Nathan Collins this summer from Wolves, so... sort of after Christmas, sort of February time, whatever. I think they were obviously looking at maybe signing him or looking at potentially signing him as one of their options. And I was asked about him and what's his character like and what's my opinion of him. And some reason they signed him because, you know, I'm joking, but no, he's just a reference. I think that's commonplace in football.
I've been so you're not saying he's or anything like
no,
that?
No, he's a great lad. So, but yeah, so we signed him in the summer, and I think they got a few references from very five or six references from
you've got to do
places.
It though, haven't you? Like even for you, you need to know that somebody coming in, they're not going to upset the apple cart. You know, like if you get a player come in, he's an absolute dickhead. Like it's amazing how quickly that rock can set in, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And the gaffer's got the policy of no dickheads. So like, you
know, is it? We've got that policy.
That's our company policy.
That's our company policy.
So when I had a Zoom chat with the gaffer and. Lee Dykes, the head of recruitment, that was their thing. They were like, "Oh, we don't have any dickheads." Like, that's our policy.
Does Thomas Frank say the word dickhead?
Yeah, literally, yeah. Like, it's like no dickheads. So I was like, "That's good enough for me." That is like, I love that. So, yeah, it's a really down to earth, humble group, and they're the type of players that he wants to sign as well.
What about when you moved? So, we were talking earlier on, just very quickly off camera, but you've spent 12, 10 odd years in Burnley. Well, no, 12 with your loan, isn't it?
Yes.
10 odd years up north.
Basically.
Up north. Yeah. Far north. Yeah.
Well, my whole life was up north.
Yeah. A long, long time. And then you move into to Brentford. Talk to us about that, because it must be a big upheaval with family and
the bright lights of London.
It was a
big change for us. Yeah, obviously got two young kids. My lad was just about to start school, all ready to go and sorted in Manchester. And all of a sudden we're packing up and moving and within a short space of time and find a place down here and we're enjoying it. We enjoyed last season. It's a nice adventure for us as a family. We're just taking it as that, but it's different not having your network around, because I'm so used to having my friends around, my family around, and
your family up north.
Everyone's up north, and trying to sort of work that around. You know, obviously not having babysitters and things. You know,
sure. it's massive,
even
isn't it?
Your mates on every now and again. It's a big change, but it's been a good adventure for us.
You have to find new couples friends or something like school parents at school,
in the playground and that. Trying to...
I'm Ben. Do you want to be my friend?
please be my friend.
Exactly.
Where does that conversation go with the wife? Then is that kind of because I say people think, oh well, it's football. You just got to do it. But it's a big old deal, isn't it? It is. Like you've got to really think about it.
Yeah, it was kind of like what are we going to do? Because we had a few options and most of them actually down south. Yeah. So I was kind of, we had conversations about moving or about her staying with the kids and maybe commuting every now and again. That, yeah. A lot of players do that, don't they?
Yeah.
Every few days go back home. But we decided to shift out and find somewhere. She was fully behind it. She's got every year.
They really are the unsung heroes, aren't they, partners? Genuinely. Yeah, I know people, like some people might watch it and go, but it's genuinely.
Definitely.
Just to
it's
support.
Hard for them.
And...
It's hard for them because, I go to football, I see people every day, communicating, talking to people. And my wife was, for the first few months, didn't know anybody around or anything like that. So it's difficult. She's found friends through school and networking and things. So neighbours, So we've settled quite well, actually, in the grand scheme of things. Initially, it's difficult.
And it's funny how the different perspective when you start to get to know people and whatnot. Cause when we had Asmir Begovic in recently, and Asmir's been up north for a long time, many years, hasn't he? And he was telling us about the commute and whatnot, and he just wants to go home. So when he signed for QPR recently, it's kind of, you look at it and go, oh, that's nice. That's a good move for him,
isn't
it?
Back home.
Yeah, back home. Yeah. That's how it goes, isn't it?
It is, yeah. For sure. And one day I'll probably go back up.
Really, yeah. Do you think you'll go back up there, yeah?
Yeah, possibly, yeah. I think so.
See how it goes down here first.
See how it goes, yeah.
But as a manager, though, I know for a fact Thomas Frank would be buzzing that you've moved down, because I think people don't know how many players actually commute.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous, isn't it? Like the worst commute I've ever seen from a player. I'm not going to name names here, all right?
I think you have in the past already. But...
No, well, I'm not going to name names here, all right? So somebody who was commuting from Manchester... down to West Ham.
I know the player.
Manchester down to West Ham was their commute, and they were doing that there and back every single day, spending the best part of 8 hours in a car.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah,
it's ridiculous, isn't it?
Crazy, absolutely crazy. I think there was one recently as well that was doing something similar as well. Maybe not as much, but. That's a crazy commute.
It's bonkers. Even if you're not driving, right? Even if you get like a driver, you get one of those lovely like Sprinter vans and stuff, and it's all pimped out in the back and it looks lovely and stuff. Yeah. You're still sitting in a car for 8 hours. It's bonkers. You can fly to Dubai. You can fly to frigging America in that time. Do you know what I mean?
It's 8 hours on a good day as well.
Yeah, on a good day as well. Yeah, no, it's common theme, honestly. Yeah. It is. It's commonplace in football. You wouldn't believe how many people do it. Right, let's take it back to Burnley anyway. So 376 Burnley appearances.
Yeah.
How you look back on your time at Burnley, because that's a good slog, that.
Yeah, really fondly. I mean, when I started at the club, Championship, mid-table, sort of fighting relegation a little bit there, and went with Eddie Howe and spent a little bit of time with him before he moved back to Bournemouth, and obviously the gaffer came in, and changed things around. We just went from strength to strength, and had some unbelievable like times, unbelievable moments, and the club just improved, and I felt like it was on track with me as a player as well. I was improving as a player and the club was growing, and it was sort of good timing. And I think that's the reason why I stayed for so long, because we were just on such a good path. And obviously becoming the captain of the club was a really proud moment as well. And, I really had a good connection with everyone there.
Did you take pride, Burnley, of being this team that I remember playing against Burnley and I hated it. I did. I absolutely hated it, but I admired it at the same time. Yeah. I loved watching it because you know what you're going to get from Burnley, and you can plan all you want, but it doesn't matter. Sometimes that just goes out the window because they will kick you. They will run after you. They will aerially, they'll try and beat you. They'll bully you. They will. They'll bully you. And you used to win games on a Saturday afternoon by just bullying teams, didn't you?
No, we did. Yeah, when we were on it, we were really good, but there were times when we were really bad, like, and we couldn't sort of get out of it, and they, those were really bad days. But I think when we got on top of a team and were running and bullying them, that's when we were at our best.
Yeah,
and, you know, we had some players that would love a scrap and love a fight and that stuff. So it was great to turn up and know you sort of got everyone behind you, and you go into games and sort of everyone's up for it. It was good. Like, and we had some good season. We finished seventh. We finished 10th one season.
Mate, Burnley away was honestly one. If somebody says, "Oh, I've got Burnley away on Saturday," I'm thinking, "Oh no, I don't need this. It's going to be horrible."
Burnley were the ones that put the nail in the coffin for your final.
West Brom.
No, Watford. That was the day you got relegated season before last.
Yeah,
2-1 at the Vic, wasn't
3-1.
It? 3-1. 3-1
was it? 3-1 at the Vic. Yeah.
Yeah.
God, it's tough, isn't it, when you're playing for those teams? Do you remember? I've probably been at a sort of similar sort of career as you, where you're always playing for these teams where you know every Saturday afternoon is going to be a battle. Yeah. And if you're not on it 100%, you're going to lose. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, definitely. I think I felt like sometimes we were a bit predictable. And that's sort of, like you say, you know what you're going to get with us. And some teams could sort of figure that out and sort of work around it, especially the top teams. Sometimes we really struggled. But you know you're always going to be in a fight and in a scrap and sort of in and around at the bottom. But like I say, those seasons that we finished a little bit higher were so good. And so nice
European
to
season.
Be in, out of the...
Mate, talk to me about this as well then, right? Because there's another theory I've got, right? For a team like Burnley, to get European football, it's a problem, I think.
It's a problem?
It's a problem. Going into the next season, you know when you've got to start back? So you've got to start back.
We didn't win a game.
That's what I mean. You've got to start back in June.
Yeah.
You need two squads, don't you?
Yeah. We didn't have a big enough squad. We played sort of in Istanbul on the Thursday night, and then we were playing Southampton away on the Sunday. We drew that game, but then we lost, I think, three games in a row. We played Olympiacos away, and then I think we were United at home and got beat, and we were just all knackered. Like, it just wasn't sort of... viable for us to
do it.
Continue that, and it's difficult, especially with a small squad.
People think like Europeans, brilliant, we're going on European adventure and stuff like that. But like I say, they don't realise the kind of the logistics involved in all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think for me, that looking at the top players that do it week in, week out, the admiration for them doing it and that, you're like, fair play to you. Yeah. It's like, you know, you're playing on a Tuesday or a Wednesday and you've got a big game on a Saturday morning and you're like, how do they do it constantly and perform at that top level? You think that
I totally agree.
So many teams struggle, don't they? When they hit. I mean, even look at West Ham last season. Obviously, they ended up having an unbelievable season, and I think the European trips are definitely for the fans, aren't they?
Without doubt,
it's amazing for the fans to go and, you know, all these European jollies. And actually, last season it did work out for West Ham, but they didn't have the greatest league campaign, did they?
Of course they did. They had a really bad start. They had to pick it up later on because they were in genuine threat for a bit, weren't they?
No, they were. And I think if you've not got a squad, you know, you do struggle. You struggle a little bit,
I want to throw some Burnley players' names at you, and you can give us a little bit of a rundown of what they are as a player, or as a person, all that kind of stuff. First of all, though, I want to start with the famous goalkeeping department at Burnley, because at one point at Burnley, right, and we have said this, that it's probably one of the best.
We talked about it with Nick Pope, didn't we?
One of the best goalkeeping trio a Premier League team could probably hope to have. Actually, do you know what? Kasper Schmeichel, I'm going to shout you out on here, Kasper, because he then texted me and said, hold on a minute, at one point we had Shea Given, Joe Hart and Kasper Schmeichel at Man City, and I went,
Kasper's right.
Fair dues, actually.
Yeah, that's frightening, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good trio. So Joe Hart, Nick Pope, Tom Heaton, talk to me individually and also about how that was when you've got them three goalkeepers playing for you.
I mean, how do you pick from those three? You know, Harty came in and you know, I think started the season for us. And
there was some injury. I think Tom injuries. Was injured, wasn't he? Popey did his shoulder. I think
shoulder.
He did,
So Harty came in for us. You know, legend, Man City legend. I played with him at City when he first came from Shrewsbury. Yeah, in the reserve team, and unbelievable like career and everything like that coming in. Great sort of to have him around the dressing room. Really good personality, and a really positive person as well. Been through a lot in his career. Energy, yeah. And been through a lot, like coming from Man City and sort of getting told that, you know, he'd had a great career there and then getting told that, you know, about leaving and finding his way again. So we had something to prove. And Heats, love Heats to death. Like he's, you know, he's quality, a great guy as well and unbelievable keeper.
What about the stories about Heats? Was it Joe saying, or someone saying about doing like finger weights in the gym, like diving around? Diving full
keepers
length
weird,
with
he,
no one.
That's weird. Tom is weird with stuff like that.
Tom's got so many things that he just, like, he won't watch like football the day before a game. And he just like little things to get his mind sort of focused and.
What do you mean he won't watch football the day before a game?
Yeah, so like a Friday night you're in a hotel or whatever, he just wouldn't like...
Watch the night game, he wouldn't watch the Friday night game?
No, he'd be writing stuff down in his room and I don't know, he's very...
I can't wait to get Tom on. I can't wait.
All the best trying to get Tom Eaton on, right? I have texted that guy, honestly, about 30 times. Mate, are you available this week? Are you available next week? He's like, I can't do this. And that's when he actually does reply because he is the worst text-a-backer I have seen in a long time.
Text-a-backer.
And then Nick Pope as well.
Pope, he's a great guy. And what a keeper as well. Like, he's been phenomenal for the past few seasons. Like, some of the saves he makes, he just like makes them look
crazy,
so easy. Like, I think people don't realize how tough how good some of the saves he makes because he's so big and long and that he makes some incredible saves. I know people go on about his feet and things, but he makes up for it for me. Like he's the best England keeper.
Really,
like, I think he's unbelievable. And he's doing great at Newcastle. So
I love Popey. I've said this. I know I say it a lot, but if I need a goalkeeper, I'm picking Nick Pope.
I'm picking Nick Pope.
I know what I'm going to get from you. Stop that ball going in the back of the net, please, Nick. That'll do for me. Give the ball to the good ones and let the good ones do the playing with the football.
Yeah.
You just worry about stopping that ball going in the back of the net.
100% agree with
you. Love that.
We've got some more Burnley names, Ben. Let me throw one in there. Yeah, go for it. Great partner of yours. James Tarkowski.
Another top guy. We obviously created a really quality partnership and loves to head things and block things like me and... Yeah, really good player. Probably should have played more for England as well. I think missed out because he played in our team and the way we played, I think just didn't suit the way Southgate wanted to play. And he's Everton now, still blocking and obviously back with the gaffer now. So I don't know what else to say about him, but a fantastic player.
How has he got away with not having a slabhead nickname, by the way? Because he has got a massive head on him.
Tabs, he's got tabs at his ears as well. Like, you probably hate me saying that. But he's got a big head,
Right, who else we got? So I believe you were at City with him as well. Kieran Trippier.
Trips. He's been on some journey, like coming from Bury. And I remember the gaffer's first day, Sean, actually first day at Burnley, he picked out Trips. Like, because Trips likes a little bit of a night out and that and stuff, and he's become a lot more professional like these days. But back in the early days, literally we're all in the canteen and that, and he picks out Trips. Says, "Oh, I know what you've been doing on Tuesday night, so you won't be doing that anymore, son." So he picks him out straight away just to lay the law down and
in front of everybody as well.
That's very kind of Ferguson like, isn't it?
I think you've got a lot of traits from Ferguson. To be fair, he came to training a couple of times.
Yeah.
But he's picked out Trips, and there's another one as well at Watford away. Trips is we've had an international break, and Trips has gone away, and we've played Watford the following weekend, and Trips has booked his flights and that and stuff, and printed his boarding pass off on the like computer in the office. So he's got the printer in the office, and he's gone to Benidorm with his mates.
Oh,
so he's come
no.
back to the following weekend. A bit of he's not trained very well all week and that and stuff. And we get pumped by Watford. So he's going like gaffer's going around the dressing room, like hammering everybody, and gets the Trips and go, "And you fucking Benidorm." So he's obviously someone seen his boarding pass printed off on the printer in the training ground, and gaffer's caught wind of it and that stuff, knows he's gone to Benidorm with his mates and stuff like that. So
anywhere but Benidorm. Don't go to Benidorm.
How sloppy is that, by the way?
Yeah. But but anyway, he's had some career, like going to Madrid, obviously to Spurs as well. And
Oh, he's unbelievable.
His goal in the semi-final against Croatia. Unbelievable, eh? So
a free kick. I knew that was going in.
Was he top scorer in FPL defender last? He must have been.
He's got to have been. Jamie knows. Jamie's giving us the thumbs up.
Got a player for you here. Some may say misunderstood, but let's hear your opinion. Joey Barton.
Got on really well with Joey. He was fantastic for us in the Championship and came in and basically demanded us to win the league, and his sort of standards all were up there, and you know, drove us on, and yeah, he got on well with everybody in our dressing room and loved the way we worked, and yeah, he loves his music as well, similar to myself, and we went to a few gigs together got in the mix, and yeah, we got on really well, and yeah, he's misunderstood, and he is a bit of a hothead at times, but he's doing a great job as well.
He's a really good player as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've met him a couple of times. I remember he was actually in the England squad with me once. I think the one time he got an England cap, I was there with him, and I just remember thinking, "Nah, you seem all right. You do, mate. You're sound."
No, he's good. Yeah, he's sound. Yeah, been out for a few beers and that and stuff, and yeah, it's someone I've got on really well with.
Skittering all over the place here, by the way. Have you ever been on the website Transfer Market?
Probably, yeah. It's sort of spelled differently, is it?
MARKT.
Yeah, I think so.
Transfer Market is basically my go-to for research on players, blah, blah, blah. On that website, this says to me that you played left-back quite a bit in your career as well.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
What is the difference, and do you enjoy it more or less or whatever? What is the difference between playing at a left-back or a centre-back? So you've got a game tomorrow and your manager says to you, you're playing left-back, Ben. Yeah. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking, shit, I've got to get forward. I've got to do a lot more running. I played left back first season in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Played a little bit. I played in the Championship as well. Moved when we got relegated, and then halfway through the next season, played centre half and sort of stayed there pretty much most of the time. And that's my best position.
Your preferred position?
Yeah, I can play left back. I can do a decent job, but I'm not a left back. I'm a centre half, and that's where I'm most effective. At fullback, I probably defend more. Or I'd definitely defend more rather than getting forward. I remember getting an assist with Sam Vokes, and like my first assist, like I'd done in ages or whatever. And he come running over to me, "You got an assist?" So yeah, that was literally the only one I got. But playing against sort of players like Hazard in my first season in the Premier League, getting twisted and turned and. Yeah, it's difficult.
You just feel you can get more exposed as a left back.
Get more exposed. I don't know if it's more difficult, because I think you play up against strong strikers, quick strikers as well. You've got to, you know, use your knowledge, experience as well.
Read the game a bit more.
Yeah, I've gained that through playing a lot more. But yeah, outside at fullback, I say I'm not the quickest player to get forward, to get back. So centre half probably suits me a little bit more.
The reason why I'm asking this, is because. It's a big deal. Like I think nowadays being a wing back is one of the most difficult positions on the pitch. Yeah. I really do, because nowadays the modern wing back is basically a midfielder. They're basically a winger. They have to get forward like crazy, get back like crazy. They have to work. They have to have quality on the ball. But then also you see it with people like Trent Alexander-Arnold. If he doesn't defend quite properly or he makes a mistake, he is getting called out for that.
There's a lot of expectation in that position, isn't there?
Massive, isn't it?
Well, you see them moving into midfield now and in the centre mid and picking the ball up in there. I play with Rico Henry. He's up and down the line. So he's basically playing winger as I've got the ball. So. You know, I'm trying to put him in behind, and he's got to run back and cross the ball.
How good is he, by the way?
He's very good. Yeah, he's a really good player. I'm very surprised that he's not made a squad.
Same.
You know, very surprised. Maybe this season he might get in there.
Yeah.
If he keeps up his form and consistency, he's had two really good seasons in the Premier League now. So I think people should be looking at him. Fullbacks, left backs, not a big strength of ours at. You know, with England as well, and he's someone that could,
easily slot in there.
He could prove himself and go and do, do some good things. Hopefully, he can do that this season.
So the reason why I asked this question about playing at left back and centre back is because we were actually watching your game out in America the other day. So it's on the Super Sunday. We're watching your game first against Aston Villa, and we were just talking about kind of the evolution of football and how it is nowadays and how it used to be. And I said, you know what? I said, look, every single one of them players, like. Back in the day, you might have two or three or four even players who might not necessarily be super fit or super strong. And I said, but look at them now. They're all, supreme athletes. Mm. Everybody is rapid. Everybody can run with the ball. Everybody can get back. Everybody's got ability. They can do absolutely, and everybody is strong as you like as well. And it was so evident on that pitch, wasn't it? Like, you look at Matty Cash for Villa on the opposite side, and you're thinking,
he's a runner, yeah.
Well, he's got everything. Yeah, he's got absolutely everything. But that is kind of like, that's the standard nowadays, isn't it?
The level has certainly gone up, like fitness-wise, you know, athletic-wise, and quality as well. Yeah. I think from when I first played in the Premier League, some great players and that stuff, but I think, like you say, the athletes now, everyone's so fit and strong, and you add that quality in as well. You know, it's just a completely different animal.
Crazy,
yeah, it's a different animal.
It was Darren Bent, I think he was saying that in his early years, even when he went to like Charlton, he said it didn't really matter as much about, because he just, his pace, he said he knew he could just get away from players.
He said he could run them. He said, I know I could run them.
Every single time. And then I think as he got to his like mid-20s, not so much him, but then the league, and like defenders, everyone is just a specimen. Yeah,
said,
absolutely,
even
every
in
single
his mid-20s,
player.
He said, I was getting to my mid to late 20s, and I was in my pomp. He said, I was my fittest, my fastest, my everything. He said, I just couldn't run anybody because everybody was rapid. Everybody was good to go.
Well, yeah, I mean, for myself, I'm 33 now, I'm getting 34 next month. So I've got to do everything I can to try and keep up with this, you know, use everything that I've got in my armoury to keep up with the lads that are quick, strong, powerful and good players as well. So, you know, it's a challenge for myself now going forward to keep
stay at that level.
Stay at that level, yeah. Stay at that level and keep performing.
Is that where the sort of like the smarts come into it a little bit? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is that where reading the game becomes even more important?
Even more important, yeah.
What does recovery look like for you? Because I was watching this quarterback documentary on Netflix at the moment about the NFL, which is incredible, by the way. And they were saying about preparation, recovery. What does recovery look like for you? Like after the game, what's your kind of evening and then day after look like?
Evening's pretty relaxed. I mean, we go home and, you know, obviously if I've got a few knocks and that stuff, we all have a game ready that we can use and that and things. So
live on a game.
Live on that.
explain for the viewers what a game ready is, lads.
So it's like an ice and compression. You whack on your legs and sort of it'll do
ankles,
both for you.
Knees, everything.
Ankles, knees. The following 2 days are more of a steady recovery. We'll have a day off the next day. And then Monday for me will probably be more of a recovery day. I might go out on the grass if I'm feeling all right, feeling good, but sometimes it'll be, or most of the time, it'd be maybe off feet in the gym, bike or something
that
like that. That's mainly my preference. And then we'll crack on into the week and have a good day Tuesday and follow it on into the next week. It's just about feeling good. I think that's what's good about the club I'm at as well. They don't sort of push you into doing things you don't want to do as well. They sort of manage you if you need to be. Everyone's different. All players are different needs and people have had different injuries. And obviously we've got a few miles in my legs. So, you know, I've got little aches and things that are here and there. But I think managing players is something that has become really important.
What about night before the game? Any sort of rituals, any superstitions, anything that you have always done?
I'm really chilled. Like, I'm not like someone that will think too much about it. Especially nowadays, don't really have any. I routines, maybe, but I'm not like strict on the routines. I'll go through, you know, don't need to do this at 9 o'clock or something like that. I'm not too strict. Just pretty relaxed and just want to go into the game pretty clear-minded and just, enjoy it. I can probably enjoy it more nowadays as well. I take it in a little bit more, when I was probably younger, headphones in, just like, I need to be focused because I need to play well, I need to do this and that, I can't say hi to people or, you know, like, now I'm like chatting to people before games and just taking in the atmosphere.
I guess like you've said many times before, mate, you're just more comfortable and you know what your game is, you know what you are. And
confident in your own sort of ability to go out and perform. I think that's something that's definitely grown on me.
Well, last season you were Brentford Supporters Player of the Year, so obviously a very good season for yourself. And actually, one thing that we spotted was on Twitter, not many players do this, but you kind of shared your PFA Player of the Year nominations last year.
Team of the Year.
So can we run through that quickly?
Yeah, sure.
Nick Pope, goalie.
Of course.
There's it.
Defenders, Nathan Ake, Gabriel Arsenal, Lewis Dunk, Kieran Trippier. Solid back four, that. Well, not back four, but do you know what I mean?
I'm happy with that. Lewis Dunk, a nice little Lewis Dunk shout
wanted to mention him because I thought he'd had a great season.
I agree.
I thought he, you know, people don't really talk about him that much. And I've always liked him, actually. I thought he's been a good player for a number of years. And obviously Brighton love him there. And I know that, you know, he's massive there. So just to give him a good shout out, I think he had a
I think I gave him a little shout out, you know, in
I think you did in the end of season awards, yeah.
And I got ridiculed for it as well. Yeah. Honestly, people shouted me down. No chance, mate.
Well, did you find that when you put this out, it's like when you put an opinion out on football, bear in mind you're both professional footballers. Mm-hmm. Unless your opinion is the same as theirs, it can be a problem, can't it?
Yeah, everyone's got their own opinion, but it was good. It came through, and I was like, might just put this out and just see what people. Yeah. People reacted really well to it. Yeah. You know, I had a good reaction, and it got a lot of traction from it. But I felt like my team was pretty decent.
Fozzy, do you want to read out the midfielders here?
Can I just quickly jump in off what you just said there about if you put a football opinion out, you'll get absolutely battered for it, right? Yeah. So we did a podcast a couple of weeks ago on the top 10 midfielders of all time in the Premier League.
Okay.
And I picked Paul Scholes as number one, right? Somebody tweeted me this morning saying, Ben Foster knows shit. Imagine a world where you pick Scholes, one position wonder, who couldn't tackle, carry a team like Gerrard, hit a ball like him, tackle like him. The man had it all. Playing three or four different positions and never looked out of place. Scholes could not.
I think that was me that tweeted you.
But that's what it is, though. I swear, you go out on a limb and say something. Nah, you're wrong, mate. Don't you even dare.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, that was quite a feisty one, wasn't it? They're the favourite, you know, favourite ones when we do a top 10. Yeah. But do you want to pick out, read out Ben's midfielders, Fozzy?
This is a heavy midfield.
Great. That's probably
the right midfield. That's the right team, I think, actually. Kevin De Bruyne, Martin Odegaard, and Ilkay Gundogan. What was it like playing against them three?
Tough. Like, we played Arsenal at our place and the quality.
Yeah.
Unbelievable team. Probably the best team that we played.
Really, yeah.
Like, on the day, sort of thing. Yeah. They were on it, like proper on it. And obviously City were unbelievable throughout the season. De Bruyne is always tough to play against. Yeah. Gundogan was on fire, especially second half of the season. But yeah, Odegaard was quality all season, I thought, as well. So,
What's it like playing against Man City? I know personally, and it's horrific. I hate every second of it. Yeah. What's it like when you're coming up against Ilkay Gundogan and Kevin De Bruyne, and I've seen you've mentioned Sergio Aguero in the past as well, saying he's the toughest player you've come up against. What is it like when you're facing a Man City side who you know are absolutely popping?
Yeah, it's difficult going to their place. I think we've been beaten by 5-0 most times we've been there. Like,
every year for the last 10 years.
Fucking Christ, we've got to go there. So Aguero, because he was playing in that team where he was getting fed, and David Silva and De Bruyne and that stuff, and it was so difficult to play against. But we had a good season against them this year. We beat them twice, but I know the last game of the season was a bit of a...
You take the wins, mate, right?
But their place was a really good win for us. So it kind of made it all better.
Yeah. I don't mind playing against them. Was that both league games?
Both league games.
I don't think that's been done for.
Be interesting to see that stat.
That's a really good stat, actually. Jumping off the back of what you said about losing every week against 5-0 every time you played them 5-0. I remember, honestly, if we were playing Man City away on a Saturday, I'd say to the lads on the Friday, and I was kind of half joking, but not, and I'd only say it to one or two that I knew I was kind of joking, but I'd be like, lads, if we get beat 3-0 tomorrow, that's a result. You know? because if they're popping, it's trouble, isn't it? It's horrible.
Oh, it's horrendous to play against, Nothing like it.
And then the strikers, Ben's strikers.
Heavy strikers. Bukayo Saka, Arsenal, Erling Haaland at City, and then Harry Kane at Tottenham.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad three. Salah could have been there as well, actually.
Yeah, he could have been.
But Haaland with a pinch in. I was reading the old...
He loves it, doesn't he? Like, he loves the pinch.
Were they hard pinches?
It was kind of half joking, that sort of thing. But it is. I know he'd done it to other players as well. I think players walking off and... I think Haaland had a few. Obviously, he's a good player, isn't he?
He's not bad. One player you mentioned earlier on, and I wanted to come back to it. You said when you first came into Prem, Eden Hazard.
Yes.
He was prime Eden Hazard back then, right?
Yeah.
Proper. Yeah.
How good was this guy?
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. I remember defending against him at Stamford Bridge and thinking I've got him. And he just sort of, and it's literally, we're on the byline, and he's somehow got around me on the byline, and I was my
touch
foot,
tight
I swear
on the
my
byline.
Foot was on the byline, and he somehow spun, got around me, and like just dropped a shoulder and just gone, and I'm just like, oh man, like, this is so difficult.
It's a shame what's happened to him.
Yeah,
he was what class. Do you make what happened?
He's got comfy, mate. He's moved to Madrid. It's lovely and warm. He's getting paid $300,000 a week, and he's gone. I'm going to pull the handbrake up and pull a star
and that's
up.
Simple as that.
Even at Chelsea, I think he was sort of
towards the end.
I think training wise, I don't think he was the best trainer I've had.
Well,
heard,
every pre-season he used to come back, and you used to see pictures of him with a belly on him, didn't you?
Yeah, and I think the top players like train well,
yeah,
play well, and they continue that and carry it on. The longevity of the career is probably due to how they continue to do what they do.
Yeah.
I think maybe him, he maybe just come away from it a little bit. And
it's a bit like, you remember like Ricky Hatton as a boxer back in the day?
Yeah.
He would do that where he would cut down for a fight and then in the interim, he would just go and have the best time for about 3 months.
Full English every day and that, yeah.
It sounds incredible, really.
Yeah, it's a great life.
And what's next for Ben Mee, the footballer, after football? So, like I say, you got a 2-year contract at Brentford.
Yeah.
I could easily see you playing until 36, 37, maybe even longer.
I'd like to.
What is, even after that, have you got a more of a long-term goal?
I'd like to play for as long as possible. Seeing how my legs go. But it's very much in my mind now to the end is
it? Is this
coming.
How it comes? When you get to sort of early 30s, is that where you start thinking, right, okay, what's next?
Yeah, putting sort of plans in place, what do I want to do next? Was thinking about it a little bit more for the future. I'm doing a little bit of media stuff.
Yeah.
Just planning sort of a few little bits here and there and dipping my toe in different areas, and saying yes to probably more things than I have done previously. You know, even coming on here today, just saying yes and stepping out a little bit of my comfort zone just to chat and just to put my opinions out there, to be ready, even going on Twitter and putting my team out there and stuff just to try things, I guess, and be a little bit more uncomfortable with what I'm doing and growing from that, I guess.
How have you found like the media? So what have you done? Have you done Sky before?
Yeah, so I've done Monday Night Football.
Oh, okay,
I did the Premier League Productions Monday night as well. Yeah, so with Michael Owen, I did that. Been on the radio a couple of times doing co-coms and a few other little bits as well on the radio and stuff. So just trying to learn and improve my chatting, my talking. I've got a long way to go.
You're fantastic. This has been incredible. Like, we appreciate you coming on because you've been fantastic.
Been great,
seriously.
Yeah,
I think everybody at home will agree, proper, just normal, down to earth, normal bloke. And I think that the more Ben Mee's in the world, I promise you, is a better world to be in.
But, like, learning from yourself, though, like the way you do this and do your media stuff and your YouTube and everything like that, it's pretty cool. Like, so, that's kind of interests me as well a little bit, doing that side of it as well, which is cool. Definitely watch a little bit of your stuff, like doing that. So yeah, it's cool and trying to be a bit more outgoing myself and trying to work.
How did
on
you
that.
Find Monday Night Football? Because I've done something similar myself and it's a very long day, isn't it?
It's a long day. We do a rehearsal from about 4 till 7 or whatever, six, and we start at 7, I think. And yeah, it's a long day. It's different, like, because I did a little bit of the radio, but obviously being on the TV and all the cameras,
makeup,
the studio,
and all that
makeup,
kind of stuff,
and you kind of find yourself watching a screen yourself. What you're doing with your hands and that, and the lads looked after me really well.
Do you remember? I saw the clip the other day, the first time Gary Neville went on.
Oh yeah, saw that. Yeah,
with Mancini.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
It's Gary Neville here.
Yeah.
it's
so funny.
It's horrible, isn't it?
But how good is he now? Like,
he's
amazing.
Man,
isn't
he's very good. Yeah, he's very good. Yeah.
Right, mate, this has been incredible. We've got some quick fires for you, and then we are done, Ski. But like I say, we really do appreciate you coming on here. Tomasi, fire away.
Right, best player you've played against?
Oh, difficult. I always go with Sergio Aguero or Harry Kane in the prime. I played against Van Persie, Rooney, Drogba, but like they were like, Ibrahimovic as well, players like that. But like in the prime, I played against them too in the prime and a lot, and it's been difficult.
Who did you find the most? Because in my head, I always think to myself, if I was centre-half, I just couldn't face Drogba. Would be a absolute nightmare.
Yeah, to be fair, it was coming to the end of his Chelsea. It was sort of a late substitution. It was Diego Costa, who was just coming into the team.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He was difficult to play against, to be fair. Like, he was a bit of an animal, but I still enjoy playing against him.
It's a battle, though. You know what to expect from a Diego Costa, at least, don't you?
He's good. I like him. But yeah, obviously, Drogba. I played against Thierry Henry once as well, actually.
Yeah, did you?
Out in America. But that was pretty cool. Some top strikers. Top strikers.
Premier League, maybe.
You're not wrong.
You've beat Man City away last season. You get home feeling good. Cheat meal. What's your cheat meal?
A curry. Yeah, it'll be...
Break it down a bit more.
I'm not a massive spice man, but just like a nice tikka masala or something like that.
We're talking poppadoms?
Poppadoms, mango, mango and onions.
We going for a naan bread?
Not peshwari naan.
Sort of rice?
Vegetable.
Veggie rice.
Or mushroom rice. I don't mind.
That sounds like a semi-healthy curry, that does,
Yeah.
Okay. Right. How about any hidden talents?
Hidden talents? I don't know. Probably not, no. I don't know, honestly.
Stick to football, mate. It's not a bad time.
Okay, what about one player throughout your career you'd most like to have on your team in a general knowledge quiz?
Oof.
Basically a smart player.
Who's the smartest player you've played with? God, it's worrying that you have to think about this. It is. It's worrying. This says a lot about the how clever footballers are.
I'm really struggling. Smart players.
Who's the smartest player at Brentford at the minute?
Probably Zanka. Matthias Zanka.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. I reckon he's probably the clever. There's not many, you know. There's not many. There's a few other way, like the bottom.
And then on the opposite side of the coin, then who is it that you do not want on your quiz team?
I thought we'd dig too many players out.
Dig away, mate. Honestly, dig away.
Right this minute at Brentford, Rico.
Oh, sorry, Rico.
Keane Lewis Potter as well is up there, both empty. Have a good laugh at them too. To be fair, like yeah, but yeah.
Okay, where do goalies normally sit in this kind of thing? I think goalies are a different breed for sure. But I'd say there's not many of us that are, you'd say, are thick at least. No. Anyway, do you know what I mean? We're a bit more thoughtful.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, you're not too bad. I get on well with keepers, to be fair.
Yeah,
I actually
generally
like Heats and Pope in that to me closest goalies mates in football.
Ones,
like, yeah, so yeah, keepers not too bad. Not too bad.
Okay, well, we've got another one for you. Your bucket list of like sporting events. If you could go to, you're not a footballer anymore, all the time in the world, what one sporting event are you
Masters.
Going to?
Yes.
Right,
Masters. Well done. So that's the only answer to that.
Yeah.
Biggest fear?
Biggest fear? Probably heights.
I thought he was going to say something like rejection or something. And get a bit deep on it.
Nah, heights, yeah. I'm not a big fan of heights.
Yeah. Do you play much golf?
Badly, yeah. I played out in America.
Handicap?
Don't really have one. Play 18.
Oh, well, yeah, I'll do. Yeah, we went when we were in San Diego, actually, we went to the Kingdom, which is TaylorMade's kind of like factory place. It's the place where all the pros go and play and they'll get fitted out and all that.
Nice,
we went there for a day. Whoa. Shout out TaylorMade for having us, by the way.
We played in Washington and we had some lads playing with us. We had to have a member play with us. Yeah. And like, lads were like...
Oh, posh course then, proper course.
Like, worked in the Pentagon. Worked like as a CEO for a defence company.
What?
With the government. Yeah, like ridiculous jobs. Like, we're like, whoa.
Tell you any stories?
Nah, he didn't tell us any stories actually, but...
which you can then tell on a podcast.
He literally got dressed into his ones or whatever you call them, like his uniform.
Yeah.
Like proper smart, go off to the Pentagon now just to
say, lads.
Yeah,
enjoyed that.
That's ridiculous, isn't it?
Mate, that was absolutely fantastic. Seriously, we really appreciate you coming on. Like I say, dipping your toe into this world, but do more of it because the people need to hear your voice. Seriously, a nice, calm, sensible, like people, like man of the people, That's what you
are.
Thanks,
man. Appreciate it.
So we appreciate you coming on.
Good luck this season.
Cheers.
Up the Fozcast.
Up the Fozcast. Nice one.
Thanks everybody for watching. We hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the Fozcast. Don't forget to give us a follow on Spotify. Up the Fozcast.